Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. It's 300 years in the future, and the Third World War has brought the United States crumbling to the ground with a takeover by China. Yet there is hope, and all of North America has band together to rebuild and govern the country. Ilia is the country's name, and kings and queens are the rulers. Enter 17-year-old America Singer. She and 35 other girls are competing to become the princess and take Prince Maxon's hand in marriage. The twist? America's in love with another man and has no interest in becoming a part of the royal family.
America's name, as well as Maxon, who is the prince, both of their names were rejected baby names that I wanted for myself that my husband did not approve. But when I sat down to write it, I gave that name to her, and it just ended up working so wonderfully, you know, with the country being the United States in the future, being a name that really stood for something. And I was really pleased with how that ended up working out, but it wasn't actually intentional.
The United States in the future, it is now called Ilia. And
yes,
as you said, there's a prince and now there is a king and queen of the country. And the way the system is set up is with caste systems and everybody is given a number.
Yeah. That was sort of part of me wanting to kind of find something that would drive her to meet Maxon, actually, and to kind of give a reason for her to have to be so secretive about Aspen. It just kind of came out like, what's the division here? Like, why wouldn't they just be together? Why wouldn't it just work out? And as I realized who she was and what she was doing and why she was in that, the numbers started kind of coming into my head, and realized that America and Aspen weren't exactly on the same level, and their relationship wasn't exactly supposed to happen. So the caste system was sort of born out of that, the necessity for America and Aspen to not have the simplest relationship.
They've been dating in secret for 2 years, and America is a five. And what that means is she has been born into a family that does the arts, so they can either paint, they can sing, and that's how they have an income.
I just kind of thought about this because, you know, growing up, my dream was never to become a writer. It's something that I fell into. I used to have this huge passion for Broadway. I wanted to be on stage. I wanted to sing and dance and act. It's probably for the best for everybody on the planet that did not happen. But I just think about, you know, those actors and musicians, they work so hard, and their talent is just huge in my eyes. But usually the people that get the credits, you know, for their talent of people you see on MTV. And that just seems incredibly unfair to me. So, you know, the twos are a higher caste, and they're the celebrity musicians, the celebrity actors. So America is doing the exact same thing as any girl on the radio, but probably works, you know, 10 times as hard and gets none of the credit.
And Aspen is a six, so he is essentially a servant, though a somewhat educated servant who gets to work indoors. And people generally don't marry to a lower caste.
Yeah, the division between the castes, especially, like, you know, just as it goes lower, you know, the sixes and the sevens to you or I might not seem like a big deal, but for them, the difference between being able to work inside to write, to read, you know, have those be requirements for their job, as opposed to, you know, to a seven who's, you know, out digging ditches. And not that they're idiots, not that they have no education, but it's not as required for them. There's a level of pride there in what they're able to do. And so the marrying down, it's not very common. So in America's eyes, you know, she loves Aspen very much. She doesn't really care about the numbers. It's never been a big deal to her. But Aspen is very aware of what she's giving up if they end up together and she has to take a step down. Because in the society, that's the way it works. You are the man, the husband, the head of the household, is what decides the caste for the family. So she would marry down to him, and then all of their children would become sixes as well. There's a couple of little tweaks for that. I think we see it through America's brother. He is trying to buy his way up in the caste system, which you can do if you have a lot of money. And sometimes girls, you know, who are very wealthy will pay for someone in a lower caste to be brought up to their level so they can just have them, because it doesn't really matter to them. But as a general rule, especially when it's really low, you're kind of stuck where you are.
And we really see that in America's younger brother, who won't decide or really can't decide what path in the arts he wants to take because he wants to be a soccer player. And I mean, it's that wonderful mentality in a child that I don't understand why I can't do what I like and I have to choose to be a painter or a writer or a singer.
Yeah, Jared is like a really sad character for me because the things that he loves, he likes playing with his little microscopes and, you know, the little sciencey things that he can manage to get his hands on. And he likes athletics. Like, that's what he's into. That's what he's excited about. And sitting down at a piano for hours and hours on end has no appeal to him. And, you know, trying to form art out of nothing, he just can't quite grasp that. But he better get on board, and he needs to get on board soon because they need him. They need him to help provide for the family. And it breaks my heart that there's just absolutely no excitement or enthusiasm or anything in him about what he has to do for the rest of his life, but he's stuck there. And I try to show not just that for the lower caste, but I think there's some of that in the upper caste as well. Like, this is where you are. This is it. And just kind of having to deal with it. Because sometimes being born to privilege doesn't mean that everything's great. You know, just because you're born with the ability to be a soccer player, which Jared wishes he was, doesn't mean you're necessarily gifted with that talent. Maybe you're not athletic. So it goes both ways, the unfortunate station that they're in, that they can't get out of where they are.
And one way that America can see a way out of this, although she is extremely resistant to it, is the selection, which is the lottery to become the true daughter of Ilya and marry the prince, which is how they choose the wife of the reigning prince.
Yeah. So, well, I can't give much away because we'll talk about the origins of the selection in the second book, but that's the way it works for princes. For princes born into the family, there's a lottery cast out among the country, and one girl from each province is chosen. It's totally voluntary, and, you know, each one gets to go to the palace, and they compete to become the next princess. If a princess is born into the family, she is given away to another royal family, to another country, to form a union, because Ilya, all things considered, is a very young country, and they do need allies, and that's sort of part of how they do it. But there hasn't been a princess born into the line yet, so they haven't had that happen in a very long time.
So I don't think it's giving anything away that America is one of the 35 selected girls to live in the palace and compete for the crown. And the cast of the 35 girls who are chosen is across the board, where you have twos and threes and fours and only two fives, including America. The way they present themselves, of course there has to be a bad guy, and Celeste is a wonderful bad girl.
I really love Celeste, and the great thing about writing this as a trilogy is that as the field narrows, I get to know some of those girls a little bit more. And there are girls in book two that sort of just popped out. I had no idea they were going to be as important as they are. And Celeste, I can't wait for people to come down the line and just sort of see her, because she's really interesting to me. And she's very skilled at being bad guy. She just kind of has that naturally in her, that cutting edge where she knows what she wants. She sees it in front of her and really doesn't stop to deal with anybody else along the way. She will get rid of you if she has to, because she wants Maxon. She wants the crown. She wants to get to the end, and does some pretty nasty things along the way.
She does. She's very calculating, and America, all the girls can see through it except for Prince Maxon.
Yeah, but she does a great job at being two-faced. You know, a lot of the girls see Celeste for exactly what she is, but she can turn on that charm for Maxon so quick. I mean, I don't think that's a stretch. I think girls in real life are very good at being one way around women and one way around men, and she just kind of has that natural ability to sort of shift gears there. And Maxon, that's all he sees, and that's all he ever judges her by. And so when, you know, if anybody comes up and tries to tell him otherwise, he just doesn't quite get it. He doesn't see that person that a lot of the other girls see.
And America never really sees her as a threat to the other girls, because she only signed up to appease her mother, and because of what happened, which I really won't give away, between her and Aspen.
Yeah. I mean, America really isn't in it to win it. She goes into it realizing that this might be good for her family. She gets compensated. Her, you know, the money situation for them as fives is not great. And so every week that she's there, they get a little bit of money. And so, you know, her heart is really in it for them. She'll just kind of go with the flow, and eventually she's going to get kicked out, and that's fine. But until then, she'll eat the yummy food, wear the pretty dresses, and just get the money for her family. And that's really her motivation there. So she doesn't even really worry about the competition the way that someone like Celeste does. Celeste would see America's sort of aloofness and playfulness and just ready to hangoutness, I guess, as a threat. She doesn't understand it, but America doesn't really see it the other way around.
And Prince Maxon, as America calls him, is just Maxon instead of, you know, your highness or prince.
Yeah.
They start bonding, and not in, I don't want to say in the puppy love way, but just in terms of getting to know somebody, like how you would hope you would get to know potential love.
Yeah. Getting to know Maxon was really important to me because, you know, America's feelings for Aspen are very, very real. And the way things sort of unfold with her going to this election is really hard for her. So getting to know Maxon, I didn't want it to be an instant attraction, which I think is really common in some of the young adult books. You see that a lot where it's like, oh, we're just meant to be. And it's really sudden, really fast. And that just wasn't true for them. I mean, they do get closer, but it happens really naturally the way it happens with the guy you go to high school with, you know, every day, and he's your friend. And then you kind of realize, oh, he's kind of cute, and he was here the whole time. Like, how did I miss this? And that was one of the things I really liked most about the way that they see each other and their sweet feelings for each other. It was just sort of kind of slow building, at least for America anyway. And the thing that I love about her feelings for Aspen is that they're very intense and they're very real, and she guards them, and it's a different kind of a feeling. So I really love America's relationship with both of those boys, and I think they're both pretty honest. That's how I feel, I think.
I agree with you, and I like how she also is able to bring a different perspective to each of them, make Aspen realize what is important to her, and the same with Maxon, and opening his eyes to a world that he really didn't know much about.
Yeah, that's it's really funny. Maxon's kind of the other end of, you know, Jared, who, you know, is kind of stuck in this world of the arts and can't imagine, you know, wants so much more and can't really see it. But, you know, Maxon is very protected. He lives in the palace. He doesn't really get out a whole lot and doesn't see much of the world. You know, he gets it in reports. He gets it in information from other people. But as far as seeing it firsthand, he just doesn't really understand it. So America is kind of a shock to the system for him. This girl who's been hungry before, this girl who's known poverty. And I really like that about their relationship. And it's one of those things I think is great in real life, too, to, you know, being put in situations where you meet people who aren't exactly like you and show you a lot about the world and make you question things. I think it's good for us as people. And for those two in particular, America kind of seeing the grander side of the world that, you know, she never expected to be exposed to. And for Maxon to kind of see that, you know, the way his life is isn't the way everybody's life is, that's good for him too. And I really enjoy that part of the story.
And before we go, I just want to touch on, while the selection is going on, it is a giant reality TV show.
It is. It's a reality TV show, and you'll hear talk of cameras around the palace. And a lot of people ask if I was a big fan of The Bachelor, but I never actually watched an episode of The Bachelor until after the selection was written, and after it was under contract, actually, and Harper Teen had picked it up. So I never had watched an episode. I did watch Flavor of Love, because that show used to crack me up, but I never watched an episode of The Bachelor. So, but I'm excited about just kind of that portrayal of, it's Maxon's chance for love, and it's the only shot he's got, but it's also, you know, entertainment at the same time, and I think that's kind of fun.
It is fun. And it's also fun to hear about the dresses and preparing for the interviews that'll be on TV and the magazine shoots.
Yeah. Those girls, they're girly girls.
Well, the name of the book is The Selection. It is the first in the trilogy. Kara, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a blast.
Again, the name of Kara Cass's novel is The Selection. It is published by HarperCollins. And keep an eye out on the CW this fall and winter as The Selection is competing for a coveted spot on the network's lineup. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.